Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Hey, hey, clones, what's cracking? Welcome back to the Daily Jungle. Thanks for showing up. Big weekend of sports, and we had it all covered today. ESPN reporter Chris Haynes broke down Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals. He shared his take on Zaza Pachulia's closeout on Kawhi Leonard. Also, NBC's Pierre Maguire came in and talked about the Stanley Cup playoffs and the war going down between Anaheim and Smashville. Plus, Texans cornerback Kareem Jackson came in and talked about Houston's defense and his amazing family story. All of that and a lot more to get to. So, Alvy, let's get it right now. Let's start with Golden State and San Antonio. Wild game. Obviously, the Warriors were in big trouble last night. They were down 20 at halftime. They were down 25 at one point. And watching them in game one, they obviously had some time off. They came out flat. They were a bit laid back. Maybe it was the rust. Maybe they felt a little too good about themselves. Either way, they were down by 25, and they were in trouble of having the home court ripped right from them. But then Kawhi Leonard goes out, Steph Curry goes off in the third quarter, and then he, along with Kevin Durant, brought Golden State all the way back.
Curry backs up, guarded by Aldridge. Now wants to go, backs him up again, dribbles foul line, takes a quick jumper, it's on the rim.
Man's game.
Bounces in for Curry! It bounced in!
Warriors radio. And so Kawhi leaves, and that only changed, not only changed the game entirely, but maybe the entire season if he's not right. So then the obvious question, we saw how he went down. First, he got tangled up on the bench. He stepped on a teammate, dinged his ankle. And then it was Warrior Zaza Pachulia who got into him. And the question is whether or not Zaza did that intentionally or not. Ask Twitter, it was intentional. Ask Spurs fans, it was intentional. However, I really don't think it was. I'm talking about this play.
Outside left it is Leonard. Leonard drives to the baseline, pulls up, long two. Back iron, no good, whistle foul. Pachulia came over to close out on Leonard, who ends up again in front of the Spurs bench, and Kawhi is hurt. This is not good. Kawhi Leonard is down right in front of the Spurs bench, and he might have hurt that ankle again. As Leonard got hit by Pachulia, he went down. He's being picked up by his teammates. And Leonard is limping a little bit as he goes to the free throw line. He clearly wants to stay in. Pachulia hit him. Kawhi yelled in pain as he holds his left ankle. He is a tough guy, but right now it's going to be tough for Kawhi Leonard. Jonathan Simmons is going to come in. Kawhi will shoot the free throws.
Spurs radio. He actually clearly did not want to stay in. And he didn't, and he left. So once again, the question is, Zaza Pachulia, did he do it intentionally? Did he do it on purpose? Was it a dirty play? Is he that kind of guy? Personally, Spurs fan, I know you're upset about this. I understand why you're upset about this. He didn't do it on purpose. I really don't see it that way. I mean, certainly this guy plays with a bit of an edge. Certainly he will do whatever he needs to help his team win. But I don't think that includes intentionally taking out the other guy's best player. Playing with an edge does not mean you're dirty. He's a 6'11" center closing out on a three-pointer. And he's not exactly graceful or terribly athletic on that closeout to begin with. I also don't think this guy's looking at the floor in that very moment, trying to figure out exactly where he can put his foot so he can hurt an opposing player. I mean, again, we're talking about a 7-footer chasing a far superior athlete with his team down by 20 and challenging a shot. And we're supposed to think that in that very moment, he would strategically place his foot exactly where Leonard would land on it and then do so with his eyes back up the court already. I mean, come on. I sincerely doubt that. I think that even if he wanted to, he probably isn't skilled enough to do something like that. And let's not forget, Leonard was already dinged before it happened. So to me, it's not intentional. It's not intentional. It wasn't dirty. It was just a really, really bad break for San Antonio. And no, it doesn't matter that he was called for a foul on the play either. There's a huge difference between being called for a foul on a closeout and then going out to intentionally injure somebody. Again, I don't think he's that type of player. I know they're not that type of team. Just as I know these two teams have way too much respect for one another for something like that to happen. Pop and Steve Kerr are very tight. Mike Brown came up under Pop. And the Warriors, I know, have way too much respect for Kawhi Leonard for one of their guys to go out there and intentionally try to take him out of the game. So, no, I don't think it was on purpose. I don't think that's controversial play. I think it was just really, really bad luck and a common foul. Kawhi Leonard himself said he didn't think it was a dirty play.
Did he step under it? Like a purpose?
Yeah.
No. He was contesting a shot. It was a shot clock was coming down. And I have to see the play.
I don't think it was dirty. I hate that a play like that could impact not only that game, but the entire series. But I do not think that was intentional. All right, so where do you come out? A lot of you obviously thought it was. 1-800-636-8686. He's set to get an MRI today, and I think it stands to reason that without Kawhi Leonard being close to 100%, I don't see how they have any chance to win this series. With Kawhi Leonard, I think it's going to be tough. Another made guy in the jungle. Old school. Gino, what's up?
Hey, Romy, you know what? I appreciate that. But, yeah, man, somebody was wronged. It was Kawhi Leonard, and frankly, it was everybody in the United States. I cannot believe that the hot take I'm hearing today is Petrulia is just clumsy. Chris Haynes, please. Clumsy people do not make NBA rosters. Elite, world-class people make the NBA. Zaza's not clumsy. He's reckless, all right? Did he intend to hurt Kawhi? Who cares? That's not even the question. You know, when you're watching a YouTube fail video and some redneck chainsaws a 100-foot pine tree and it lands on his mom's trailer, who cares what his intent was? His mom's homeless. And when a reckless person is driving his F-350 down a street and he crawls out of the window and his truck careens into a tree, who cares whether or not he intended to total his male compensation device? His reckless behavior was increasing the odds exponentially that that was going to happen. That was 100% going to happen eventually, sooner rather than later. And saying that Petrulia intentionally stepped under Kawhi is not some sort of conspiracy theory. I'm not spotting UFOs, all right? I don't see Woody Harrelson's dad behind the Dubs bench with an umbrella. Watch the film, Rome. Zaza stepped out to defend. Kawhi jumps. And then Zaza steps out and to the left. Out and to the left. Watch the film, Rome. He steps out and to the left. There was intent, and the people of this country deserve to know the truth. Eat kids, Rome.
Eat kids. Gino, go ahead and rack him. Got a little JFK in there. Chris Haynes is my guest. Chris, always good to have you on the show. What's up? How are you?
Jim, long time no here, man. Glad to be on.
Good to have you back, man. You know that. All right, so San Antonio comes out hot last night, Chris, and Golden State did not. What was the mood like in that building when the Spurs were up by 14 after the first quarter?
It was pretty quiet, pretty mute, and Oracle Arena is known for, you know, having one of the loudest, rowdiest environments in the league. But it caught a lot of people by surprise, obviously including myself. You just didn't expect to see San Antonio kind of jump out on them like that. It seemed like the Warriors weren't ready. I spoke with KD on his way out the arena last night, and he said he felt like he equated to a boxing match. He felt like, you know, they were trying to figure each other out. They were both throwing jabs. He said the problem was they didn't go to their identity initially. He said he felt like instead of bringing it to them, that they wanted to see what San Antonio had to offer first. And he said that was a mistake. He said, moving forward, we'll know next time. We got to go for the juggler from the start of the minute. So it was definitely a sigh of relief feeling after the game in that locker room. But definitely that was a performance that I don't think most people expected San Antonio to bring initially.
Chris Haynes joining us. He's an NBA reporter for ESPN. In fact, Chris, after the game, Draymond Green called it, quote, a perfect game one because you get punched in the mouth, but yet you still find a way to get the win. Now, what about Kawhi Leonard? If he does not leave that game with an injury when he did, do the Warriors come back to winning game one?
Man, it would have been tough because even though Kawhi was a little still hampered with that ankle injury, he was still producing. He wasn't getting the lift that he usually get, but he was still driving to the basket, had a couple finishes in the half-court setting as well. I don't know that they go on an 18-0 run with Kawhi out. I would say that. I definitely think the Warriors were going to make a run. That's just in them. That's what happens in the league. Teams go on runs like that. But 18-0, I'm not so sure. I think it would have been close. I think it would have been an interesting game. And that's going to be something that I think we talk about when this series is set and gone. You know, would the Warriors have won game one if Kawhi didn't go out? We just don't know. But I think it's for certain that I can say for sure that I don't believe they go on an 18-0 run with Kawhi still in there.
Clones. Let me talk to you about Ferguson. Ferguson helps facilities pros by supplying innovative and reliable products, but what Ferguson really offers are solutions. Ferguson has a dedicated team of facilities experts, and with nationwide coverage, we deliver directly to your facility right when you need them. Plus, Ferguson's broad inventory of maintenance, repair, and operations products, along with plumbing, HVAC, and appliances, sets Ferguson apart from traditional facility suppliers. So learn more about how Ferguson Facility Supply can help your facility at Ferguson.com today. That's Ferguson. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Chris Haynes joining us. All right, Chris, so where do you come out on Zaza Pachulia? He took a lot of heat from the Spurs fans for what they thought was intentionally trying to injure Kawhi Leonard, considering it's the same Zaza who fell into Kevin Durant and left KD with a grade 2 MCL sprain earlier in the year. I mean, where do you come out? Was he trying to hurt Kawhi, or is Zaza maybe just not the most graceful guy out there?
He's really not. He's really not. And I was just going to mention that KD incident, if you didn't, Jim. You know, he's a guy. He's the wrong guy that you want to get injured, you know, get injured by accidentally. You know, the Warriors are always making jokes about Zaza Pachulia's big head. And, you know, that was the same head that cut, injured Kevin Durant's knee. He's just not the most balanced, graceful guy. When he's running at you, remember, this is a 7-foot guy. He's not that, you know, he's not that fast. And he's running out at you trying to contest a shot. So when he's trying to stop, there's not going to be a prompt stop. There's going to be some movement, and his body is going to shift. And unfortunately for Kawhi, he's already, you know, dealing with a tender left ankle, and Zaza steps on. And so I don't think it was intentional. I think that was for sure. And Kawhi even said it. He said he didn't see any ill will on Zaza's part. I just think it was a very unfortunate situation, because that was the second time that Kawhi re-injured his ankle during that game. So it was just bad fate, you know, on the part of the Spurs. And hopefully, I think we're all hoping that Kawhi could come back for game two. It just doesn't seem likely right now.
Chris Haynes joining us. You know, that's exactly where I come out on this. I mean, the guy's just, he's a 7-footer trying to close out on a superior athlete. He's just not that graceful. It was really bad luck, but I don't think it was intentional. What about game two, which you mentioned? It's tomorrow night. What is your sense then, Chris, as to whether or not Kawhi will be available to play and able to make a significant impact?
See, the thing about with Pop, like if this was any other coach, I think Kawhi plays, because I think Kawhi would say, hey, I want to play. But Coach Popovich, he most times errs on the side of caution, and he wants to make sure his guy is as close to 100% as possible. I'm not sure Kawhi is going to be anywhere close to that at any point during this series. So I think Coach Pop, man, it's all going to be on Coach Pop. I really do think they sit him. Just the way, look, Jim, when he was walking out, you guys saw him, when he was walking off the court, man, he needed help. He was leaning on a trainer to get back to the locker room. That's not a good sign. And it's a pretty quick turnaround for game two. I just don't see it. And if he did play, I don't really think he could be a factor, especially now on the defense again, when you got to chase around Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson. I don't see it, Jim. I don't. Barring a miracle, I do not see him playing the game two.
Chris Haynes joining us, an NBA reporter for ESPN. All right, Chris, what do you make of Steve Kerr? He speaks to the team at halftime. They're down by 20 at halftime. What's your sense as to the impact that his words had on the Warriors?
Well, I think it was a little inspiring, because I don't think, you know, any of the players expected Kerr to have a voice, particularly at halftime. And it was something out of the norm. And I talked to Stephen Curry about that, you know, after the game. He was talking about Steve Kerr just brought a different perspective as somebody who was watching and seeing the plays from different angles and replays from the back. He was able to provide a different context, different perspective for the teams to go out there. And I just think he's just motivated. I don't want to make too much of a big deal of, you know, I heard a quote, inspirational, powerful speech and things of that nature. But I just thought, you know, it was something that was unexpected. It was a little bit out of norm. You don't really hear from another coach during halftime. So I think it kind of riled them up a little bit, But I think for the most part, I'm not trying to downplay the incident, but I think for the most part it had to do with Kawhi going out in that 18-0 run.
Chris Haynes joining me for another couple of minutes. You know, it's easy for people to think that when you've got the talent that the Warriors have, the coach doesn't have a hell of a lot to do. So what do you make of that idea? And then what do you make of how Mike Brown has handled everything since he took over for Steve Kerr?
Oh, man, Jim. You know, look, man, obviously the Golden State Warriors are a talented bunch. They've been playing together for a while. There's a foundation in place. Steve Kerr implemented guidance. He implemented a culture, a fun, free-flowing culture, and the guys seem to gravitate towards that. I will say this, because I'm not trying to diminish what Coach Brown has done, but I will say this, that when the Warriors are trying to find an assistant over the summer, they went into it with the mindset of, hey, Steve Kerr might continue to have some reoccurring issues given from that back surgery. So if there is a time and place where Steve might have to miss some games again, we want to have a lead assistant who's had head coach experience, somebody who could kind of come in seamlessly. Now, they didn't expect this to happen, and they didn't expect this to happen certainly during the playoffs, but Mike Brown, that's why Mike Brown was brought on board, just from his experience. And then you look at Mike Brown and what he's doing with his team, he's a defensive-minded coach. That's what we know Mike Brown to be. And so the offensive end pretty much runs itself. Draymond Green, people don't know this about Draymond, but, man, Draymond is probably one, the closest thing, you know, him and LeBron to being a player coach out there. So Draymond has had a lot to do, especially on the offensive end, with what plays are being called and things of that nature. But Mike Brown, you can't take much from him because you can't take anything from him because he's a guy who's been around the block. He's well respected, so he commands you know that you listen to him. And so you have to give him props from keeping the stability there. But I think it has a lot to do with the talent and the culture that was implemented by Steve Kerr.
Chris Haynes, my guest. Chris, one last thought, because you've covered both Golden State this year and the Cavaliers in years past. Warriors are 9-0 in the postseason. Cavaliers are 8-0 in the postseason. They're waiting for the winner of the Celtics and Wizards. I mean, in the event that they run into each other once again in the finals, on a personal level, what do you think the Warrior players think about the Cavs players? I mean, do they respect them? Do they hate them? Is it something else? What is it?
No, it's definitely respect. It's respect on both sides. Do they like each other? I wouldn't go that far. I think they definitely want to, you know, look, the Warriors want the Cavs. The Warriors want the Cavs even more so than the Cavs want the Warriors, because obviously the Cavs won last year. But the roles were reversed the first year. It was different. The Cavs won the Warriors because the Warriors won that first one, and the Cavs didn't have Kyrie Irving or Kevin Love. So this is definitely something that I think both teams want. Both teams, as you mentioned, Jim, I covered both teams the last couple of years. Both teams follow each other extremely closely. They monitor everything. And that's one thing that I witnessed with Cavaliers last couple of years. After every single game, not every single game, but after a lot of games, the Cavaliers will have the Warriors games, you know, in their locker room on the TV. I haven't seen that with the Warriors, but the Cavaliers are a topic of discussion when you see them talking amongst themselves. So it's definitely a heated rivalry. They definitely want to see each other, and I'm looking forward to it. And I think one thing about that is I think we've all been talking about this round three finals between those two teams. And I talked to a couple of the Spurs yesterday, and they said, like, you know what, we've been listening to that talk. We've been hearing everybody dismiss us. And I think that was a reason. That was another motivating reason why they came out so strong, man. So I don't know. I think Kawhi and his doubtfulness in this series, that's going to weigh heavily on what the Spurs do. But, man, I think this is more of a series than I think we've all expected to be.
I think when you're texting and you end up killing somebody, but you might not have intended to do that, all I care is what I saw. All I care about is what happened. And the history there exacerbates the whole situation and makes me very, very angry.
A basketball player should have a responsibility for the safety of the other 9 individuals on the floor.
Nobody wants to do anything that would put anybody else in danger for a game or a career. This guy's history is different.
Ducks and the Preds. And now that series is tied up at a game apiece, and they're headed back to Smashville. Man, get ready for a war. Because Ducks bully Ryan Kesler is in the kitchen of Ryan Johansson. and the Preds centerman went all in on Kessler, one of hockey's great agitators, after the game with this rant.
He just blows my mind. I mean, watching, I don't know what's going through his head over there, but like his family and his friends watching him play, I don't know how you cheer for a guy like that. I mean, it just doesn't make sense how he plays the game. So, you know, I'm just trying to go there and play hockey, you know, it sucks when you got to pull a stick out of your groin every shift.
So good. I mean, it's so awesome. You know I'm going to run that back in a minute. He's like, it just blows my mind. I mean, I cannot believe. He's like incredulous. I can't believe that guy gets away with that crap. I can't believe that friends and family come watch him play and they cheer for him. And it's not easy to play when you've got to pull a stick out of your groin every single shift.
It just blows my mind. I mean, watching, I don't know what's going through his head over there, but like his family and his friends watching him play, I don't know how you cheer for a guy like that. I mean, it just doesn't make sense how he plays the game. So, you know, I'm just trying to go there and play hockey, you know, it sucks when you got to pull a stick out of your groin every shift.
It's certainly one of the quotes of the year in the NHL. One of my favorite quotes ever. I mean, I'm not even overreacting to it. That is so funny what he just said. Like, I don't know how you cheer for a guy like that. I don't know how that guy gets away with that. I don't know how you play the game like that. I just know I don't like pulling a stick out of my groin every single shift. But that's Kessler. That's what this guy does. And maybe the only thing that's surprising is that Johansson didn't know it was coming. And Johansson's a really nice player. Really good player. Which is why Kessler is going in on him the way he is. And that's who Kessler is. He's been doing it from the day he got in the NHL, and he sure as hell is not going to stop in the Stanley Cup playoffs, not in the conference finals. I mean, he all but said as much in the postgame to Sportsnet.
The game within the game, though, is it you versus Ryan Johansson. There's certainly verbal as well as physical sparring there. How much do you enjoy a battle like that?
Yeah, obviously, you know, he's a skilled player, and you know, I play the game hard, and obviously he doesn't like that.
These two dudes are the best, and they started in on each other even in the warm-ups. I play the game hard, and he obviously doesn't like that. That does not sound like a guy who's too concerned about the complaints that he's heard at literally every stop along the way. And again, he's not going to stop right about now. If anything, you can look for Kessler to dial it up. And why? Two reasons, as always. Why does anybody do anything? Because they can. And number two, because it works. He's clearly under Johansson's skin and he's in his head. This is what Kessler does. He takes guys out of their games. He gets them to do things they would not ordinarily do. Case in point, rattling Johansson into high-sticking him in the second period. And by the way, that was not clumsy. That was intentional. He also won a number of key faceoffs down the stretch, and the Ducks were able to close the Preds out. So Johansson gets hooked, he takes the bait, and now that Kessler got him, you can expect way more of the same. Game 3 tomorrow from Smashville, round 3, Kessler v. the Preds. Obviously, Johansson is going to be a lot more comfortable on his home ice. And if Kessler cracks him with another elbow, this time Johansson will get that call, assuming he stays down. Because despite losing the home ice, last night is exactly where the Ducks want this, with Kessler famously agitating in the other guy's kitchen and making breakfast for himself and his family. And it's not even the Preds. I mean, go ahead and ask his own teammates. Ask Ryan Getzlaff. Ask Corey Perry. Kessler has talked about how when he was in Vancouver, those were two guys he used to, quote, troll by any means necessary, end quote. And he's at it again, and it's working again.
Pull a stick out of your groin every shift.
It's awesome. Another reason to watch that series. Another reason to watch the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. It's tremendous. Let's go to Alberta. Back to the phones. Brian in Alberta. It's good to have you, Brian. What's
good
up?
Good to be on, Jim. Good to hear you.
You too.
I think you get hockey. I think it's a fine line. If you ain't rubbing, you ain't racing. Little stick in the groin, there's a spear, there's the look away, there's an elbow in the teeth. But getting under a guy's skin, sometimes you draw a penalty, you never know. I stand up for good, tough hockey and a little bit of yapping out there. Never hurt anybody. Sutter loves that hockey, too. That's my take.
You got it, Brian. I don't disagree with you. Hey, listen, Kessler is without question on the edge. My man's on the edge. My man may step over the edge on occasion, but he's doing what they pay him to do. He is agitating. He's physical. He's intimidating. And you need not hear anything other than Johansson's reaction after the game to know that he is in his kitchen and he's making omelet after omelet after omelet. He's doing what the hell he wants. Now, Johansson's a really nice player, and he's coming fast in this league. He'll get back home. He'll get more comfortable. He'll get the benefit of the doubt. But Kessler's doing what he's always done. He's doing what they pay him to do, and it's working. And if you talk to his own teammates, they love him, but they would tell you the same. We hated this guy when we went up against him. He's not an easy guy to play against, and what he's doing is working. He did hook Johansson. Got him to get that high-sticking penalty. And then if a guy, you tell me if it's working. Listen to what this guy said after the game. Very clearly, this is a guy that's frustrated and angry to the point where he's saying things like, I mean, I can't even believe that his family and friends come to the games. How do you cheer for a guy like this?
He just blows my mind. I mean, watching, I don't know what's going through his head over there, but like his family and his friends watching him play, I don't know how you cheer for a guy like that. I mean, it just doesn't make sense how he plays the game. So, you know, I'm just trying to go there and play hockey and you know, it sucks when you got to pull a stick out of your groin every shift.
Kind of like Larry Robinson. He's hooking me. I'm just minding my own business trying to play hockey, but it's pretty tough to do that when I got to pull a stick out of my groin every single shift. I can't play hockey. Guys sticking a stick in my groin every time I take the ice. Let's go to Alberta. Back to the phones. Brian in Alberta. It's good to have you, Brian. What's up?
Good to be on, Jim. Good to hear you.
You too.
I think you get hockey. I think there's a fine line. If you ain't rubbing, you ain't racing. Little stick in the groin, there's a spear, there's the look away, there's an elbow in the teeth. But getting under a guy's skin, sometimes you draw a penalty, you never know. I stand up for good, tough hockey. And a little bit of yapping out there never hurt anybody. Sutter loves that hockey, too. That's my take.
You got it, Brian. I don't disagree with you. Pierre McGuire is my guest. Pierre, my friend, what's up? How are you?
Everything is great, Jim. Really nice to chat with you.
Pierre, great to chat with you. Thanks for making time for us once again. Now, you were on the call for Game 1 of the Sens-Penguins series. How much did Ottawa show you, Pierre, in going into Pittsburgh and beating them in overtime the way they did?
They showed me a lot in the previous two series, Jim. They were really good against the Boston Bruins. They won a deciding Game 6 in overtime in Boston, not an easy place to win. They went into New York and won a Game 6 in New York, not an easy place to do it. Plus, in that series, they came from behind in Game 2 and Game 5 to win games, which was highly impressive. They've shown me a lot throughout the playoffs. What they did in Game 1 is I think they took advantage of an emotionally drained Pittsburgh Penguin team that spent a lot of emotional collateral in their previous series with the Washington Capitals winning a Game 7 on the road. So I wasn't surprised how Ottawa played. I was a little bit surprised Pittsburgh didn't have more emotional energy, but I would expect that will pick up tonight in Game 2.
You know, I'm going to pick up on that point in 1 second. One more thought about Ottawa, Pierre. They probably don't win too many games on style points, but I'm guessing they really don't care about that. I mean, they've got talent, but how much of their success is just about talent, and then how much of it is about outworking, outgrinding, and just having so much more grit than the other guy they might be going up against?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with what you just talked about. It also has to do with Erik Karlsson. They have one player that's star power personified. Jim, when you really look at it, I mean, this guy can take over games. Right now, he's the best long passer in the game, so he's got quick strike offensive capabilities. He's as quick as any defenseman left playing in the playoffs in terms of top-end speed, and he has got the poise and the composure of a guy that's doing high wire acts without a safety net. He's just an amazing player, and he's been a huge difference maker for them, Jim.
Pierre McGuire, my guest. So, Pierre, I'll go back to Pittsburgh and what you had to say about them. They obviously exerted so much emotionally and in terms of energy in the previous series, but their head coach, Mike Sullivan, said after the game, he felt like the team was, quote, looking for that next play instead of putting pucks at the net, end quote. How much of that, though, was about Ottawa and what they were doing defensively with their trap, and then how much of that was about Pittsburgh just not taking shots?
You are so plugged in, Jim. It's a pleasure talking to you. It had a lot to do with Ottawa, less to do about Pittsburgh and more to do with Ottawa. Sure, Pittsburgh was passing off and trying to be too cute, but that's the problem when you play Ottawa. They make the neutral zone a swamp. They turn the front of their own net into a brick wall. It's really hard to get fancy plays on their goal. The only way you can play against Ottawa is establish a lead early on, Jim, because if you don't establish a lead, they can continue to play with those great defensive tactics that their coach Guy Boucher has deployed, and it makes it a really hard game for the opposition to play. If you can get a lead against them, it's different. They can't play with those tactics. They have to open up a little bit more.
Right, so that said, now that they've got a game against Ottawa and they've got to look at how they do it, how do you think the Penguins do come out in game two?
Just based on what I saw today around their dressing room, Jim, at the morning skate, I would expect you're going to see them a little bit more of a high-flyer team. I think you're going to see them be a little bit more of a pugnacious team on the forecheck. I think you'll see more pucks in deep, more body slamming on the forecheck. A player like Chris Kunitz is going to have to make a difference. A fast player like Brian Rust is going to have to make a difference on the forecheck. I'd expect you're going to see Crosby and Malkin try to really elevate their game. I would expect you're going to see a different kind of Penguins team here in game two.
Pierre McGuire joining us. All right, Pierre, what about Anaheim and Nashville? Fascinating series so far. Anaheim loses game one in Nashville. They fall behind 2-0 in game two last night. Then they manage to come back and they score four goals on Pekka-Rinne, and they win that game. A series is never over until it's over, Pierre, but knowing how tough it is to play in Nashville, how much trouble would the Ducks have been in if they were down 2-0 going back there?
They would have been in huge trouble. I mean, I did a good portion of Nashville's first-round series with Chicago. I did virtually all of their second-round series against St. Louis. Going to Nashville is like going to purgatory. It is really a tough place, and that's because of their fan base being so energized and the way the building is constructed. It's a phenomenal place to watch a hockey game. It's a great place to be the home team. It's not so great to be the visitor. I have so much respect for Randy Carlyle. I think, Jim, before the playoffs started, I told you Anaheim was probably one of my top picks in the West just because of Randy's ability to coach and also the mobility of their defense and the leadership of Ryan Getzlaf. We've seen all those things so far, Jim, when you really look at it. So at 1-1, it's a different series. Down 0-2, they're in big, big, big trouble.
Hey, Pierre, sidebar. If it sounds like you're everywhere, it's because you've been pretty much everywhere. Now, I know you're not looking to make it about yourself, but take a moment here. You broadcast 44 playoff games in 51 days last year. You've started this year's postseason with 8 games in 8 days in 6 cities. We've made it through the first 2 rounds. How are you holding up mentally and physically right about now?
I feel great, Jim. Not counting the first game of the third round, I did 27 games in 29 nights.
It's insane.
In the first 2 rounds.
Incredible. That's an insane number. How about this? According to the New York Times, you traveled 65,000 miles in the postseason last spring. That's an insane number. Look, Pierre, nobody loves hockey and their job more than you do yours. But physically, there's something to this. I mean, just doing the travel alone would take most people down. How do you maintain your focus and your energy during a stretch like that?
A lot of time in the gym, believe it or not, Jim. No pun intended. And getting a lot of afternoon naps. I really mean that. I think it's important. But outside of that, the first 2 rounds is pretty regimented. I mean, it's usually a 4 o'clock wake-up call, early morning flight to the next city, get to the next city, have a nice meal, get 2 hours of sleep, go to the gym for about an hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes, and go right to the rink and then do the next thing. So the regimentation makes it actually easier. So that's the positive part of it.
You got to eat clean too, right?
You really do. You know what? That's the biggest thing. And the other thing, and I'm not trying to be, you know, a little softy boy here, but I gave up all alcohol during Lent, and I carried it over and through the first 2 rounds of the playoffs, and it really made a difference.
So I was going to say, how does that feel?
It felt great. But I won't lie, on Saturday night after game one here, I had 2 beers.
Good, and I bet that felt even better.
It did.
Pierre McGuire joining me. Good. Glad to get caught up on that. Before you go, Pierre, so you've got Ryan Johansson clearly irritated by Ryan Kesler last night. You saw the quotes and you heard what he had to say. What's your reaction when you hear his reaction? Is Kesler in Johansson's head?
I don't think he's in his head, but I think what they're trying to do is plant the seed for the officials going into game three in Nashville. I know both players really well, and I respect both of them. I want both on my team. I think if they were teammates, they'd probably be best friends, but obviously playing against one another, and especially with the strong, robust style of Ryan Kesler, he makes that hard on anybody he plays against, and he's equal opportunity. He doesn't care. He just does it, and he's really good at it. For Ryan Johansson, it's really his first time through this kind of stuff, and he's figuring it out that, you know, once you become an elite player, this is what happens. But I think more than anything, that whole thing, I think, sounds a little bit more like the coaches may have planted something in his head to try to set something up so that things were called a little bit tighter when they got back to Nashville for games three and four.
And it should go better for him once he gets back there. But in terms of Kesler and his approach, Pierre, do you have any issue with what he does or how he plays? Is he dirty, or is he just doing his job and doing what it takes to win?
He's playing right on the edge, but I'll tell you what, he doesn't cross the edge. He's one of those guys who really understands his role. I have so much respect for him. I'll tell you a quick story about him.
Please.
When he was in Sochi, Jim, he blocked a shot in a huge game for the Americans, and it sure looked like he broke his arm. And he came to the bench, and he just said to the trainer, just take care of me right now. I'm going right back out. And he went right back out. Now, we're talking about an Olympic game. We're not talking about playing in a Stanley Cup final where he's, you know, getting paid and all that stuff. It's just a totally different thing. I have so much respect for this player. There's not a team in the league that wouldn't want him. And he's one of those. Remember the great Jack Youngblood playing on a broken leg?
Oh,
Jim?
Yeah.
This is Ryan Kesler is him. Ryan Kesler will play through anything to play for his team. That's the kind of guy you want. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal player.
You know, Pierre, I wonder about that. I mean, is that a Kesler thing or an Olympic thing? You know, because that becomes another topic, the NHL and the Olympics. I mean, do you think that the NHL, even though you've got to shut down your season for a couple of weeks and they may not get as much out of it as they'd like to get out of it, is it still something they should do, or is that kind of a ship that sailed and maybe they should not be in the Olympics?
I'm heartbroken that the NHL is not going. I understand the ownership perspective on it, and I understand the league's perspective on it, but I would tell you this. I've been fortunate enough since 2002 to do every Winter Olympics and two Summer Olympics, and it's just a gathering spot for the best athletes in the world, and I'd like to consider our NHL athletes some of the best in the world, and it breaks my heart that potentially we're not going. It really does. I'm still going, and I'm looking forward to it, but it would be awesome if the NHL players could go.
Joey in New Bedford. Let me think. I know that name. I know that. Joey in New Bedford. Alvin, do you remember that guy?
Romy, what's going on?
What's up?
I was
going
to start my call with Jim. My name is, but I wasn't sure how that would be recepted. I didn't want to catch a buzzer.
That's it? I didn't know how that would be recepted guy. Old schoolers remember that. Alvin, is there a date on that call? God, that feels like that was a decade ago. I have no idea how long ago that was, but that's a long, long time ago. I don't know that we've heard from Joey since he wasn't sure how he'd be recepted. Let's see how this call is recepted. My man, Joey. See, that's my thing. If I stay in the game long enough, it all comes around. All of it. Even Joey in New Bedford. We go there right now. Joey, is that you? What's going on?
Romy, what is up?
That is you. What's up, man?
It's been, you know what? Stucknut Steve hit me up on Twitter. He said, hey, Romy's looking for old school callers. I figured I'd pick up a Vine, and why not? And honestly, I couldn't remember the date for that call, but my daughter's 11, and I'm pretty sure it was before that, so you can kind of do the math on that.
That's incredible. All right.
It's great to be on the phone, though. I just wanted to jump in real quick and say what up. I don't know how the Spurs blew a 25-point lead yesterday. I get that Kawhi Leonard is a stud, but 25 points, it's only one player. That he is, Spurs are in trouble. They're going to have to check themselves for game two. And the Pierre Maguire interview was great. I've been to Nashville a couple of times. I know you guys mentioned that Nashville and Anaheim series. That place is going to be absolutely ridiculous for games three and four. I wish I could get down there again. And I'm just going to say, go Smashville. You know, I'm going to leave Eddie Lacy alone because he's still balling out. So I'll let him do his thing. I don't want to talk about making weight because I could use a shed of a few pounds myself. And I'm just going to bounce out. War Stucknut. War never, ever staying recepted again. I hear it a million times. Stucknut hits me with it all the time. And I can barely handle my one daughter's schedule. Did you just say that Cromartie kicked his second extra point and has 14? I'll check you later, Rome. Late.
Nice job, Joe. Joey in New Bedford. Go ahead and rock him. That's old school. Now, when I said I'm hoping for the old school, I meant old school good callers. But that's better than nothing. I'll take that. Joey in New Bedford, that was a classic jungle moment, and it was more than a decade ago. Man, Stephen A. sounds amazing. Like, Stucknut has chronicled all of this. And he knew. And he goaded him into calling. Hey, Stucknut, stay on it. Who else can you dig up? Joey in New Bedford. And that should be recepted much better than that first call. Hey, Joe, check me back in 10 years. See you then. That is old school. Stucknut's got everything. Literally anything that's ever happened on this show, he has chronicled and archived, and he knows. So if you have any questions, like the ATP, I don't even know why they direct him at me. They should go to Steve. They should go to Stucknut. Stucknut's got better takes. He knows this show better than I know the show. They ought to go there. Hey, Stucknut, you know who I wouldn't mind hearing from? Now that I'm thinking about old school. You know, I think about the old school. I think about the guys who have been in the smack off. How about a guy like Oren in Denver? Alvin, do you have any Oren in Denver in the archives? For some reason, that just kind of hit me. Oren in Denver was a guy that would mix it up. That was a guy that made the show better back in the day.
I had a couple people talking to me, and discretion is supposedly the better part of valor. But this isn't one of those times. Jethro in Richmond, I get to focus my attention on you, bruh. I don't know what mixture of hay and raccoon droppings you've been toking on in that corncob pipe of yours, but it must be the chronic because you plumb flipped your lid, homie. You mean to tell me you hopped in that horse and buggy you call a sled, took 3 days rations, and motored all the way into town from that shanty you call a crib in the middle of that swamp you call a suburb to get your jungle life crushed? Listen closely, Huck Finn. I might have got myself run before I got a chance to finish, but you will not be so lucky there, Forrest, because I'm going to make sure I get through this call. Similar to the way your lady, your second cousin, isn't leaving the local juke joint until the last swig of moonshine is gone out of that triple X mug she calls a shot glass. I promise you, Jebediah, by the time I'm done with you, you're going to wish you stayed on the porch, sipping mint juleps, strumming and a-picking on that comb, outfitted with rubber bands that you call a banjo, trying to listen to Romy over the sound of all 18 of your youngins fighting over who Pappy's going to whittle a pair of shoes for next. I hope that you and your wife Clementine enjoyed that five-course smorgasbord of roadkill possum with all the fixings under that kerosene lantern hanging from the ceiling by that wire hanger you call a chandelier last night, because right now you are getting your manhood took. Old Clem might not be able to look at you the same way after this. And we all know what that means for you, Jeff. It's back to sleeping in the chicken coop, listening to the Soggy Bottom Boys on that phonograph and playing Spin the Bottle with the Sheep.
Playing Spin the Bottle with the Sheep. That was not a smack-off call. That was some random call in the middle of some week in the year 2006. Oren. Now, as I think about Oren, Oren did get a radio show after calling this show, I think. I'm almost certain. Stucknut would know. Hey, Stucknut, why don't you find Oren? Get busy. That was an absolutely incredible call. That wasn't, if that were a smack-off call, that would have been an amazing call. And that was 06. If that guy made that call today, it would be better than 99.9% of the calls that we get on this show. And when he was going off on Huck Finn and Clem and Jethro and Jebediah, he was going in on another classic jungle caller, a guy who once won the smack off, Jeff in Richmond. Jeff in Richmond had taken a run at Oren.
Memo to all you Knicks. If the new Knicks fetch up enough of them big calls of the day, maybe Oren from Denver, epileptic from Denver, will pull out his Clake and debit card and buy you up one of them fancy Rolodex watches. So stay after it next.
Jeff in Richmond, that's the Huck Finn that he went in on. And that's how that went back in the day. So when you hear some of that clone-on-clone crime today that you think is so great, in a sense, the clones that are constantly yelling that it was so much better back in the day, on some level it was. When you listen to that, that was more than a decade ago, the types of calls that were being made. And I really don't know what happened to either one of those guys. Joined right now by Texan Kareem Jackson. Kareem, nice to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
It's good to talk to you. All right, so bring me up to date. You're playing some golf. Well, maybe a little bit of golf at the team's charity event and some softball at J.J. Watt's event. But when it comes to this time of year and you look at the talent that you've got on that roster, how anxious are you to get back to playing football?
Man, we're really anxious. Excited, like you said, with the talent that we have, you know, on the defensive side of the ball. You know, and, you know, first and foremost, you know, to get JJ back, to have him back healthy, man, it definitely means a lot to our team. And, you know, with the draft picks that we added, you know, we're extremely excited about this year.
Now, I want to hit on both those things, but let me ask you this. You and Jonathan Joseph have been the starting corners in Houston since 2011, and over that time, your opponents have the lowest completion percentage in the NFL. I mean, obviously, defense is 11 guys working together, so you're not going to take all that credit for it, but how much pride do the two of you have in the stat that I just read?
Man, we take a lot of pride in it. You know, it's one of the things that we work towards, you know, to go day in and day out. I mean, they're just trying to perfect our craft, you know, in the off season, you know, doing things on our own. You know, with me and him being out there, you know, and being on the same page and, you know, seeing things, you know, kind of the same way, you know. And like I say, it's one of the things we work towards, you know, for us to have that, you know, that the lowest percentage in the league, you know, is definitely, you know, a great thing for our team.
Houston Texans cornerback Kareem Jackson joins us. You mentioned draft night, and you're an Alabama guy, so I'm guessing you've seen a little bit of Deshaun Watson over the past couple of years in the national championship game. So what was your reaction when you saw the team trade up and draft him?
Just more so excited. You know, I kind of look past the, you know, him beating my guys in the national championship this year. You know, but I mean, I know what he's capable of. You know, just watching him in the last couple of years in the national championship, and you know, throughout his career at Clemson. You know, he did some great things on the college, you know, stage, and you know, so we're looking forward, you know, for him to come in and, you know, definitely give us a huge boost offensively, and you know, to be a leader offensively. So you know, I'd say just definitely excited to have him here.
Kareem Jackson joins us. You know, when you look at the defense that your team has, the fact that the offense has all these weapons all over the place, the thinking's been that you're just missing a quarterback. That said, that's a lot of pressure for a rookie quarterback to come into. So in your opinion, how fair is it to expect that he'd be able to come in, take over right away, and this team could make a deep run?
Well, we don't want to necessarily put all that pressure on him. You know, we have other guys, other pieces surrounding him. You know, Lamar Miller was huge for us last year. You know, and our tight ends was huge as well, you know. But at the same time, he's definitely going to have to come in and, you know, he's going to have to be a leader, you know, and, you know, do the necessary things to go out and to be successful on Sunday, which, you know, and I'm sure the coach has done a great job of, you know, just kind of looking at his background and knowing that he's a capable guy, you know, before even drafting him. So for us defensively, we just want to go out and do our job, you know, whatever we can do that make things a lot easier for him or whoever's going to be on the center, you know, we definitely want to do that. We want to be dominant each and every Sunday. So, you know, anything we can do, like I say, that'll definitely help him in the offense, and, you know, for those guys to have, you know, better field position, create turnovers, you know, whatever we have to do is make it a little bit easier for him.
We're talking to Kareem Jackson. Now, Kareem, yesterday was Mother's Day, and your mother, Rosalyn, is a two-time breast cancer survivor. Can you take me back? What do you remember when you first heard that news that she was diagnosed with cancer? Because it's, for anybody who's ever heard that, it's like the scariest thing ever. What went through your mind the first time you heard that?
The first time I was young, so you know, I didn't really have a full understanding of, you know, breast cancer, you know, stuff like that. You know, a little bit before that, my sister actually had leukemia as well, and she's a survivor as well. But and I was young and just kind of thinking, you know, is my mom going to be all right? You know, am I going to lose my mom? And, you know, stuff like that. And nobody ever wants to lose their mom, especially at a young age. So to see her fight through that and, you know, and still being me and my sister's life and, you know, and continue to do the things she did day in and day out to make sure that we was okay, make sure that we had everything, you know, and my dad helping as well. You know, I mean, she's an amazing woman. So, you know, with Mother's Day, you know, rolling around each and every year, you know, I get a chance. I just want to just let her know, you know, how much I appreciate her and, you know, to know she's, you know, definitely one of the strongest women that I know.
Your mother is an incredible person. I want to read a quote that she said. I mean, she was so determined that she was not going to leave her kids. She said, quote, "I had two children I had to raise. I didn't want to leave them. And after that, I put up my dukes and I was in for the ride," end quote. I mean, what a powerful thing. So what have you learned from her? I mean, you're an NFL player, so you're obviously thought of as one of the toughest people anybody will ever run into. But how tough is your mom? What'd you learn from her?
Man, she, like I say, she's definitely one of the toughest women that I know. You know, just seeing her go through that, you know, just knowing, you know, the way she attacked cancer and, you know, the way she battled and, You know, and for me, that's just a mindset that I attack everything with. You know, just going into it, you know, just being positive, you know, and just attacking it, you know, each and every day.
Thank you very much for listening. You know, I appreciate it. I appreciate you. If you don't mind, can I get you to hit subscribe? If you haven't done so already, tell a friend if you haven't done that. And you know the rest. Trust the podcast. Check back tomorrow for more Daily Jungle. See you then.